On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is where we slow down developments, take them one at a time. Here's an outline. We'll look at legislation the governor signed last week, including a requirement for commercial truck drivers to be trained to spot human trafficking. And then there was that controversial bill making it a felony to trespass or damage pipelines. So what do you think of the governor signing this into law? Does it infringe on free speech? Are you a truck driver? Do you think educational training could help you spot human trafficking? We're at 800-642-1234 to join in. Laurel White is Wisconsin Public Radio's State Capitol reporter, and she's co-host of the WPR Politics podcast. Laurel, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
So Governor Evers signed this bill last week that will make it a felony to trespass or damage oil and gas pipelines in Wisconsin. There was a lot of debate around this. What happened there?
So this is a bill that had a lot of interest from a number of advocacy groups. Ultimately, it passed the legislature with a fair amount of support. It was a bipartisan bill. It had both Republican and Democratic sponsors. It passed out of an assembly committee unanimously, Senate committee with only one opposing vote. But there was some pretty profound, as I mentioned, just activism against this bill because of some ramifications, primarily with free speech and individuals who come to pipelines to protest.
And it was a build out of a 2015 piece of legislation. And they said they were going back to correct that 2015 legislation or add to it. What was going on there?
So one of the things about this bill that Democrats have pointed to in particular is the fact that it has exemptions for these penalties for trespassing on the private property of oil pipelines for people engaging in like union picketing or activism in that regard. It also has an exemption for, quote, exercising a right of free speech or assembly that is otherwise lawful. So it does have some of those extra tenets that Democrats say make it a little bit more conducive to allowing people to kind of voice their opinion and their opposition to these pipelines.
We heard from tribal nations specifically on this bill. Does it have the power to impact tribal communities trying to live on their lands?
That's what tribal communities are saying. So the Bad River Band of the Chippewa said that they've been hunting and gathering on land near an oil pipeline on their land for quite a while. And they said that, you know, them being there and continuing to engage in that activity would open them up to possible criminal prosecution, actually a felony charge under this new law. And they said that was really unfair and inappropriate.
Let's take a look at the CNAs. The governor vetoed a bill that would have required less training for certified nursing assistants. Currently, CNAs, they have to train for 120 hours, but the bill would have reduced that to 75, the federal minimum. What message is the governor saying here by not signing this legislation?
So he says, as some opponents said in the process of negotiating this bill, that reducing those training hours will hurt the quality of care. Interestingly, he said that the amount of training also has a correlation with job turnover, how long people stay in these roles. And he said having people trained to a certain degree will actually help address the nursing shortage because of that turnover. So it's an interesting dynamic because the governor says his veto actually perpetuates some of the things that the sponsors of the bill said that they were going to do. Just very different approaches.
We're talking with Laurel White. She is Wisconsin Public Radio's State Capitol reporter. Are you a nurse or a CNA? Should the governor have approved lowering the hours requirement to become a certified nursing assistant? Could this have helped the nursing shortage? Or do you think this was the right decision? Are you a truck driver? Do you think educational training could help you spot human trafficking, perhaps prevent it? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So the CNA's bill, this bill would have made it easier to become a nurse as Wisconsin faces a nursing shortage. What are the lawmakers who introduced the bill saying about this decision and it not going further?
So the two sponsors of this legislation released a statement after the governor released his veto, saying that with his veto, the governor is essentially disregarding people who need the care of nurses who are facing this shortage, who are seeing the ramifications of, you know, not having enough people in this profession right now. I think it's also interesting to note that some of these sponsors, or some of the proponents, rather, including the sponsors, have pointed out that a number of states that border Wisconsin have that 75-hour requirement, or a requirement that's less than the 120 hours that Wisconsin currently requires. So they said that, you know, bringing Wisconsin down to the federal minimum would bring us closer in line with some of our neighbors.
Let's look at human trafficking now. Last week, the governor signed a bill that would require training for commercial truck drivers to recognize human trafficking. Why did Governor Evers, target truck drivers here?
So he said that truck drivers are on the front line of this issue because they're, you know, they're on the ground, they're moving around the state. They're often situated in areas where trafficking has been known to take place, like truck stops, rest stops. This is actually a bill that's been circulating around the Capitol for a few years now. And so it's been a conversation that both Republican and Democratic lawmakers have been having about how to address human trafficking in Wisconsin and who are kind of the key figures to play a role in that.
Do we know yet what this training would look like?
So basically what this training would do is it would require commercial truck driver education programs to just roll human trafficking education into their curriculum. So the curriculum would have to have information about how to identify human trafficking, you know, what are kind of the warning signs as you're out and about, how you might sort of be able to see the indicators and how you would go about reporting that.
Well, let's take a call now. Crystal is joining us from Toma, commenting on the CNA legislation. Go ahead, Crystal.
Hi, thank you. My only comment is I've been in medical care for quite a long time, and nursing assistants, CNAs, are basically underpaid, underappreciated, and overworked. And until you fix that, there's no change in training hours. There's no dealing with the patients and turnover. You have to, they're the backbone of our medical care. We as nurses depend on them. They interact with the patients or the residents much more often than we do as nurses, and they do not get paid for the credit or the patient for it. So, you know, debating about hours of training is really going to be a moot point as we start taking.
Yeah, Crystal, thank you so much. And you're breaking up there, but you said notably that CNAs are the backbone in healthcare, that they're underpaid, and that, you know, we need to address this in a different way. Laurel?
That's something that's definitely been a conversation at the Capitol as well, is increasing pay for CNAs. That wasn't something that was an element of this proposal, though. So I think that as that conversation sort of continues to evolve about how to address worker shortages in various fields in Wisconsin, you know, it's all about that allocation of resources and where lawmakers decide they want to put wage increases and where they can't.
We are in the mix of the State Capitol Report with WPR's Laurel White as our guide. What do you think about how the state handles open records requests? Does the governor need to be more open and transparent? Do you feel there is open government in Wisconsin? Or do you think there are transparency blunders? Join in 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a moment, more State Cap with WPR's Laurel White right here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're breaking down developments one at a time, including a new lawsuit challenging Wisconsin's voter ID law. A national organization brought a suit against the Wisconsin Elections Commission last week. It says that student voter ID requirements are difficult and ultimately preventing students from voting. Are you a student or someone who voted in an election as a student? Do you have difficulty trying to vote? What are your thoughts on student voter ID requirements? Should they change? We're at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. WPR State Capitol reporter Laurel White stays with us. Laurel, what does our current state law say about student voter IDs?
So under current law, student voters have to present an ID that has three components. It has to have the issuance date, it has to have an expiration date, no more than 2 years from that issuance date, and it has to have the signature. Now, interestingly, in addition to having that ID, students also have to produce some proof of enrollment at the polls. So they have to have something like a transcript or a tuition bill or something like that to show that they are currently enrolled in school as well.
And they have to bring this with them to the polls in order to vote.
That's right. Now, that can be an electronic document, so students can show that on their phone if they would like, which doesn't apply to everything that you can show at the polls, obviously. But they do have to have that additional documentation, or the ID having those three things doesn't matter at all.
So you spoke with a lawyer with the Andrew Goodman Foundation who filed the lawsuit, and here is Yael Bromberg talking about voting rights and why they shouldn't be a partisan issue.
The value that young people play in our democracy is an issue that's beyond partisanship.
So what is the Andrew Goodman Foundation arguing here?
So the foundation is essentially arguing that these requirements that we just outlined are too burdensome for students, and they're essentially making it too difficult for them to vote, and that is a violation of the U.S. Constitution's 26th Amendment, which protects against age-based voting discrimination.
So have you seen this foundation bring this type of lawsuit in other states?
Yes. So this is actually part of a coordinated effort across the country where this foundation is bringing this kind of lawsuit against Republican-backed voter ID laws that they say are too restrictive and limit some people from exercising their constitutional right.
What are supporters and opponents saying about the current status of student voter ID law?
So this is really a debate that's been playing out in Wisconsin for, you know, almost a decade now. Wisconsin's voter ID law was passed in 2011, and we've had a whole slew of lawsuits, and kind of the continual argument from opponents of the voter ID law is this argument here that, you know, that there are barriers being put up to certain populations, particularly populations like young people or minorities, and that it's keeping them away from the polls wrongfully. And they say, you know, voter fraud issues are not nearly prevalent enough to warrant this sort of change in state law. Now, supporters of voter ID say that voter fraud does happen and that there needs to be kind of this line of prevention that's put in place to keep voter fraud from occurring in Wisconsin.
And this case is currently on hold by a federal judge waiting another voter ID case brought in Wisconsin. So what is the impact here in the courts, and what is the timeline like?
So this is a really interesting scenario where we have, as we sometimes do in Wisconsin, kind of interacting lawsuits and overlapping lawsuits. So there are currently three voter ID lawsuits that are all awaiting a judgment by the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals in Chicago. Now, this lawsuit filing isn't technically on hold yet because it was just filed. There is some speculation that it will be looped under one of those other cases because of some similarities that a judge might see it having. There was a similar lawsuit that was filed about student IDs earlier this year and about sort of the barriers that the student ID legislation law puts up. And it was filed under one of the bigger lawsuits that's already at the Seventh Circuit Court. So that could be a path forward for this one.
We're talking with Laurel White. She is WPR State Capitol reporter, and she joins us for a roundup of developments at the Capitol. You can join in. What do you think about how the state handles open records requests? Does the governor need to be more open? Join in at 800-642-1234. We saw Representative John Nygren, who chairs Joint Finance, file a lawsuit against Governor Evers last week. He wants the governor's administration to stop hiding public records. He says, what public records requests have been made recently to explain why Representative Nygren filed the suit?
So some folks might remember the kind of conflict between the legislature and the Evers administration over the Farmer Suicide Prevention Program and the funding for that program earlier this year. That, of course, led to the eventual dismissal of the Agriculture Secretary Brad Paff. Essentially, what Nygren is looking for here is 1 month's worth of emails and information from the governor's office about that suicide prevention program. He says that the governor's office and the administration had more information about the program than they were sharing with lawmakers, particularly the chair of a suicide task force in the assembly. They say that the administration had money that it was choosing not to tap for the program and doing that kind of for political reasons to say Republicans aren't funding this program. So Nygren requested this information from the governor's office. The governor's office declined to share it with him. So now he's going this legal route and asking a Dane County judge to compel the governor to release the information.
What has the governor's track record been while in office for open government, for Sunshine?
He's had a number of challenges from particularly conservative groups. You've seen this challenge. The Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty has been involved with some challenges to the governor's open records laws. So it's a kind of a consistent, I think it's safe to say that there's kind of a drumbeat from some conservative individuals and organizations that the governor is not doing enough for transparency in Wisconsin.
Governor Evers recently signed a bill ensuring accommodations will be made for people with developmental or physical disabilities at polling sites. Let's bring in Barbara now in Milwaukee on disability rights. Hi, Barbara.
Good morning. I'm happy to talk with you a little bit about AB 168, which Governor Evers signed into law in River Falls on Friday. During the November 2018 election, DRW, Disability Rights Wisconsin, received contacts from deaf voters and other voters with disabilities regarding the barriers to voting that they experienced due to current Wisconsin law, which required them to speak their name and address. Legislators took action and unanimously approved this bill, which will provide an accommodation and allow voters to have an election official or other individual selected by the voter state the name and address for them.
Barbara, thank you for bringing this to the table. Laurel, what does this mean at polling sites? What is the impact here?
Well, you know, as Barbara kind of outlined there, it's going to make it more accessible for certain individuals who have these limitations. And that's something that the governor has said is very important to him to make sure that all individuals have the accommodations that they need to, engage in their civic duty.
Barbara, thanks so much for calling. Let's look at the Supreme Court debate here for a moment. Last week, the first debate was held for the Supreme Court justice race. Supreme Court Justice Daniel Kelly is being challenged by Jill Karofsky, a Dane County judge, and Marquette Law Professor Ed Filone. Things got heated last week in this debate. What are you sensing there with these candidates?
Well, I think, this debate was a real preview of how intense this race is going to get. It was pretty quick that Karofsky and Filone, who are the liberal-backed candidates in this race, were criticizing Daniel Kelly for a number of things. I think kind of the first thing that Karofsky really went after Kelly for was her perception of him being partisan on the bench, kind of ruling in favor of conservative causes consistently. And she said that she was surprised. How can the law always be on the side of these conservative groups is what Karofsky said. So the role of partisanship and party ties in state Supreme Court races has been something that's getting more and more common over the past several years. You know, this is technically a nonpartisan race, but we're seeing increasing spending from party groups and kind of a conversation about judges' bias and their personal beliefs.
Yeah, what was Justice Daniel Kelly's response on that?
He said that that actually Karofsky kind of pointing out the conservative interests in some of these cases, she was making it partisan. And so he said she was actually kind of bringing a political lens to it, that he doesn't think of it that way, that he completely divorces any political personal beliefs that he has from the work that he does on the bench. And that's something that we heard an awful lot from the previous successful Supreme Court candidate, now Justice Brian Hagedorn. So that was a successful message for him, and we're definitely hearing Kelly echo that.
Laurel, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Laurel White is Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol reporter, and she's co-host of the WPR Politics Podcast. Coming up, the State Capitol Report continues with Democratic State Senator Janet Buley. We're discussing campground regulation, other bills she's recently authored. What questions do you have for the state senator? You have a line, 800-642-1234. State Cap continues with Senator Janet Buley right after this news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're visiting with State Senator Janet Buley. She represents a large swath of the northwest part of our state. She's authored more than three dozen bills this year, and we'll look at a handful of them, starting with a bill to deal with the spread of Lyme disease. What do you think about state efforts to address Lyme disease? What questions do you have for State Senator Buley? What issues do you think lawmakers should be working on? Do you operate or work at a campground? How do you feel about the state imposing new regulations on campgrounds? We're at 800-642-1234. You have a line. Democratic State Senator Janet Buley of Mason is Assistant Minority Leader. She represents District 25, which includes Superior, Ashland, Rice Lake, and much of the Shawamigan-Nicolet National Forest. And she joins us from our studios in Superior. Senator Buley, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
It's always a pleasure to be with you. Thank you for having me. I like representing a swath. I like that.
Yeah, you'll pocket that for later. So you support a package of bills aimed at curbing Lyme disease from tick bites. Among other steps, this legislation would require signs and brochures at state parks and require state parks to make bug spray available for purchase. Are these steps enough to address Lyme disease?
I'm not sure. I think it's a start. I think that, first of all, we need to do so much education about what Lyme disease is and how you can get it. As we try to encourage people to come to the north and spend time in the beautiful forests and rivers that we have, they often don't even know that a simple tick bite could cause Lyme disease. So we want to start at the very beginning at a place like the Welcome Center or a kiosk or something that can begin to let people know that some of the dangers. I mean, we tell them about bears, but we don't tell them about ticks as something that you should just be aware of.
So education is the first step. Is further action by the state still warranted?
Well, I think that doing things like having insect spray available for sale would be a good start. Again, we want to both educate and then, and as you say, do something that's really going to have an effect. And at least providing the purchase of insect spray right then and there. Someone may say, oh, we'll get it tomorrow when we go grocery shopping. But you need to have it right away. If anyone has ever had Lyme disease or knows someone who has, it can be very debilitating and very long-lasting. You can miss a lot of work.
Another package of bills that you support would bring new regulations to recreational or educational camps. Do you see safety issues at a camp in your part of the state that justified greater oversight from state authorities?
Well, one of the things that we know and that I have observed by visiting some of our many wonderful camps is that they are well run. I think that what we have on as law right now regarding what kind of expertise they have to have and what their requirements are to function are completely adequate. The four bills that we are hoping will pass this next session all have to do with procedures for providing medical care and for maintaining the buildings themselves. So it doesn't change any regulation about how they function. We want to make sure that the campers have adequate care when it comes to their health. And so one of the things we want to be able to do is allow volunteer physicians and nurses from other states be able to come and for a short and finite period of time be allowed to be the resident doctor or nurse so that because they often volunteer and that helps keep the cost down for campers. So two of the bills, one for doctors, one for nurses, allow that if you're licensed in another state, you may come into Wisconsin for a finite period of time for the purpose of volunteering at a camp, and then your license will be recognized. The other bill has to do with record keeping for medical records. Right now, the camp is required to maintain a physical bound book of records, and that language is current law, a bound book of medical records. Hmm. And what the camp administrators want to do is to be able to do what all doctors' offices do now, which is to maintain files computerized. There's lots of software that you can use to maintain files that way rather than having to have physical pieces of paper.
Well,
and
then go ahead.
Uh-huh. No, just going to end. The final bill is about letting the physical structures that are not meant to be year-round or occupied for any other use other than campers to have some leeway in the inspection and building codes so that if they do something, they're not then required to completely refit the entire structure according to residential building codes, that the inspectors can and are able to take into account the use and purpose of these buildings so that they don't enforce unnecessary codes onto the campgrounds themselves.
On this package, let's bring in Gabe now in Milwaukee with thoughts. Hi, Gabe.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. My name is Gabe. I run a children's summer camp in northern Wisconsin. Thank you for talking about these bills on your show, and I just wanted to thank Senator Buley for her leadership on these issues.
Hi, Gabe.
Yeah. Gabe, hi. What in particular are issues as a children's camp director, and what impact will this legislation make?
Well, you know, I think Senator Buley actually summed up all of them fantastically, which is one of the reasons that it's so nice to work with her on these, is that she actually understands from a camp director's perspective what are the things that we're facing. To take, for example, the bound logbook, as a camp director, we obviously the safety of our campers is our utmost concern, and our nurses and doctors are just not used to writing everything down in a physical logbook. Everything these days is electronic. So when it comes to the medical care of our kids, we really want everything to be with what's current and what they've been doing in hospitals and clinics for years. And to ask them to kind of go back in time to a system that is sometimes outdated is really difficult. And so if we can bring everything up to what's current, I think it'll help streamline the process, make things for our nurses and doctors easier, and make things better for all of us at camps.
Well, Gabe, thanks so much for the call. Senator Buley, do you find that it is just trying to bring these campsites into the modern realm? Has this legislation been around circulating for a while?
It's been circulating for a while. We have had hearings in the Assembly and the Senate. The Assembly has scheduled a vote. We are waiting for the Senate committee to schedule a vote. Once those two things happen, it can go to the floor. So it is looking like it can go to the floor either January, February, the next time that we get together. I also want to point out that the places that we have available, particularly in the north, for summer camp for kids, like the one that Gabe has, is often the first introduction to our state by families. They will come here, and it begins a life, years and years and perhaps generations of visiting the Northwoods, choosing to come back for other events or family gatherings. And it just increases the number of people who get to come and visit and understand how wonderful the Northwoods are. And I'm very grateful to the camps for just informing so many people of what a wonderful place it is. And by camping, by going to a camp like those, it's really a wonderful experience. I've talked to many people who say, oh, I was in camp blank and blank, you know, when I was a kid, and I've been coming up every summer ever since. And I know that our Secretary of Tourism, Sarah Meany, is looking into how we can build upon what we know is that very positive experience for kids, and perhaps set up more family camp opportunities so that there are actually camps like these for kids that are for entire families.
We're looking at a range of bills, legislation with Janet Bewley. She's a Democratic state senator who represents a large part of Northwest Wisconsin, including Superior, Ashland, and Rice Lake. What do you want to ask State Senator Bewley? What issues are important to you in northern Wisconsin? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Senator, one bill in a package, Senate Bill 424, would extend new regulations to all childcare centers and providers. They would be required to test for lead in their drinking water and stop any contamination under their state license. Why are these additional requirements necessary?
Well, if you think about it, the lead in the pipes is of serious concern primarily to the youngest children. And if you have a daycare center in someone's home and have that moment, that opportunity to find out if the water is safe for them, then we've got this great time, this great, I call it a moment where we can have those that testing take place. It one of the things I want to make sure we do is then have an opportunity for the daycare provider to access either very low interest loans or perhaps grants. I'm realistic enough to know that we're not going to get a lot of grant funding, but some funds to be able to help them implement it. Because once you find out you've got lead, you have to do something about it. So sometimes, you know, I'm not saying daycare providers do this, but sometimes we tell ourselves no news is good news. I'm not going to go looking for trouble. But we have to look for trouble when it's at a daycare center. So it's a great, great thing to keep our kids safe.
We're talking with State Senator Janet Bewley, a Democrat who represents part of Northwest Wisconsin. Do you live in Superior or Ashland or Rice Lake? What should your state senator know? What issues do you think lawmakers should be working on at the Capitol? Join in 800-642-1234. Back for more State Cap in just a moment with Senator Bewley here on the Ideas Network. On a Monday, you're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're talking with Democratic State Senator Janet Bewley of Mason. She's authored or sponsored dozens of bills this year, and we're talking about a handful of them with your insights and questions along the way at 800-642-1234. Do you live in northern Wisconsin? What issues are most pressing? What should your state senator know? Call in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. And State Senator Bewley stays with us. Let's go back to the phones now. Linda is joining us from Pewaukee. Hi, Linda.
Good morning. I was wondering if the senator could speak to the deer population in Wisconsin and its effect on the prevalence of Lyme disease. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. Yeah, the deer population, Senator Bewley, and the impact of Lyme disease there and chronic wasting disease. What do we know?
Well, first of all, I don't know if the ticks themselves are only for the deer or if there are other carriers at all. So I would suggest that I learn more. Everyone just look at what kind, you know, what is the prevalence of ticks in your area. But deer ticks are one of the ones that carry Lyme disease. There's a lot of deer out there. Now, there are some who would say there aren't enough. It depends who you ask. If you are a forester, you're going to say that there's too many deer and the deer are eating all the browse and it inhibits. If you plant seedlings, the deer eat them immediately, so it's very hard to propagate new trees. Then again, other people say there aren't enough. But this is a first year where every county in the state is allowing does, and usually sometimes we limit that. So it's hard to say. The size of the herd is one of those things that everyone has a different opinion. But definitely the prevalence of deer ticks is of a concern.
Linda, thanks. State Senator, you recently introduced legislation that would require the Attorney General to form a task force investigating violence against tribal women and girls. The current Attorney General, Josh Call, is a fellow Democrat. If the task force is a priority, why can't the Attorney General just create it?
Well, the Attorney General usually, when it comes to things like task forces, wants to work with the legislature so that we can all be coming together. And if we actually pass a law, then it adds that level of willingness for people to come onto the committee. And it's just more approval and a wider scope. So we expect that the Attorney General will be very enthusiastic and play his part in it. The importance of forming this task force cannot be underestimated. We must listen. We must have a very broad range of members on this committee so that we can hear the voices of Native women themselves, law enforcement on the tribes, on the reservations, and we must also look at what we can do to, first of all, find and help these women who are missing or being abused and be able to make sure that we start paying attention. Oftentimes, we don't have a record specifically being able to identify how many Native women have reported abuse, have been threatened with violence, or have been abducted or are missing. We need to have that data, and we need to be able to get our arms around the scope of the problem before we can really launch strong and effective preventative measures.
Do you think that legislation would then come next year?
Well, I'm hoping that it could come. Yeah, I'm hoping very much that we can pass it before we adjourn next spring.
You live about 250 miles from the state capitol as a crow flies, and this trip can take 4 or 5 hours by car. How do you decide when you need to be at the capitol?
Well, all senators are on multiple committees and councils, and beyond our work writing legislation and serving on the individual committees, I'm on about 4 or 5 committees, 3 councils, a couple of task forces. They meet year-round, whether or not we're in session. So in the summertime, I'm probably able to go to the Capitol once every other week, maybe even a longer distance between when I'm down there. But during, you know, fall, winter, spring, I'm there every week. I go down typically on a Monday and come home on a Friday. But since my district is so big, I can spend those Mondays and Fridays as I stop on my way down, because my drive is typically, you know, 5.5 hours. So that gives me a chance to stop and say hello at, you know, different senior centers or the library or city hall. And so I make use of the time. And I listen to a lot of books.
Oh, you should be listening to a lot of public radio.
Oh, absolutely.
We're catching up with Janet Bewley, a Democratic state senator who represents a large part of Northwest Wisconsin, including Superior and Ashland and Rice Lake. You can join in. What issues do you think lawmakers should be looking at the state capitol? We're at 800-642-1234. You took a lot of heat from some constituents this year for supporting that legislation that makes it a felony to trespass on pipelines. That legislation was signed into law by Governor Evers last week. One pipeline near you in particular, operated by Enbridge, runs across tribal land and has been the subject of protests and a lawsuit and debate. How are you handling this conflict?
Well, you know, when someone has a concern as deep as protecting the earth, I take it extremely seriously because I agree. We must do something about global warming and climate change. We must do something about the infection into our environment of oil and toxic elements. So their concerns are legitimate. When it comes to the legislation, I think one of the hardest parts of it is that it is called the felony trespass bill, when in fact we specifically designed the bill so that you can not be charged with a felony if you go on the land for the purposes of free speech. So it should be called the defelony protest bill. So if you go there to protest, you are not made a felon. You can become a felon if you go beyond that, if you try to inhibit a worker, if you want to damage property, if you want to live there, if you want to form an encampment on the ground. That would not be what we consider otherwise lawful within freedom of speech. So I hope that people realize that my goal was, number one, public health and safety, that many of these places, actual power plants, new or old pipelines, these are dangerous places, and we must protect people and workers. Number two, I would not have been on the bill if it did not defelonize normal expression of your rights of free speech. That is why I'm on the bill, is because you are not made a felon if you are protesting, union organizing. If you go up there to inspect something, you are not. You can be charged a lesser crime for trespassing than a felony. So that's really important, and I really regret that it has been called the felony trespass bill, because normal protesting will not result in a felony.
State Senator Bewley, thank you for joining us.
It's been my pleasure.
Democratic State Senator Janet Bewley of Mason is Assistant Minority Leader. She represents District 25, which includes Superior, Ashland, and Rice Lake, and she joined us from our studios in Superior. Just ahead, a look at Wisconsin's shrinking turkey industry ahead of the Thanksgiving holiday. Are you planning to cook a Wisconsin bird this week? Has it been easy to find one? More on the state of turkeys in Wisconsin in a few minutes. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is a State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.